It's time for the Big Picture program with AB Dawji, who joins us on the line. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
How are you on this lovely Friday morning? No dal chow today.
Things are a breeze here in Durban, Mufti.
How's Ramadan in Durban?
Ramadan is just going very fast.
Are you still recovering from your trip? A bit jet lagged?
No, not at all. Alhamdulillah, it was a wonderful trip. Very easy. No problems, no stress, no nothing. The best group.
As always. The story that caught your eye.
Well, we don't have much time, I've been told. So let me quickly run through maybe one or two stories that that had me sitting up in my chair and wondering, what in heaven's name is this world coming to? Could it be that global warming is making people crazy? Is the radiation from our cell phones frying our brains? How then do we explain this increasing number of nutcases doing extremely loony things? But first, let me make a comment. Many people like to put personalized number plates on their cars. Nothing wrong with that, I say. Nothing wrong with that. You find them all over. I suppose Gauteng is full of it, Mufti. Ridwan GP or Faiza 2 GP. And here, I saw quite a few with the number 4 and the letter U. The message is, for you, Sandra, or for you, Mutu, and so on. Some are quite strange. The letter U, then the letter N, and the letter V, and the word me after that. If you read that, this is what it says. U, N, V, me. Meaning that you are jealous of his car. I saw that on a very old Cortina. But I suppose Muslims like to have the number 786. Like 786 KZN is a winner. So what do people pay for such personalized plates? The last time I checked, it was, I think, a few grand. But here is a question. What would you pay to have the number 1, the number 1 as your number plate? Say on the old format, the old-fashioned TJ1 of a Durban ND1. How much would you pay? Listeners, 10,000 rands, 20,000, maybe 30, 40, 50. What about 100,000? Any bids on 100,000 for TJ1? No? Well, let me tell you about what a businessman in Sharjah, in the United Arab Emirates, paid to get the number 1 on his car number plate. There was an auction last week, and this fellow, his name is Arif Ahmed Al-Zaruni, was the highest bidder. How much did he pay to get the number 1? Can you guess, dear listeners? 100,000? 500? Maybe 1 million, eh? No, dear listeners, you are very much out, completely out. Are you sitting down? Arif Al-Zaruni paid 18 million dirhams for that number plate. And that is equal to, are you ready? 72,598,479 rands. Can you believe it? For a number plate, he was so happy. Interviewed by the Gulf News newspaper, he said, "My ambition is always to be number 1. Well, dear listeners, I second the loose motion. On behalf of the listeners of Radio Islam, I also declare him number 1. The number 1 Mampara in the Middle East. But wait, maybe I do him an injustice. He paid over 72 million rands for his number plate. But that's not a record. In 2008, the number 1 was being auctioned next door in Abu Dhabi. How much did the guy who got the number pay for that? Don't guess. I will tell you. He paid 52.2 million dirhams. That's 210,535,589 rands. 210 million. Can you believe it? I think there's a huge crisis here, dear listeners. There is a serious shortage of badam dood in the Middle East. Really. There can be no explanation for paying 210 million rands for a number plate. Isn't it wonderful? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has blessed these lands with a commodity that gushes out of the ground. You just put it into barrels and sell it to the rest of the world. How fortunate they are. Oil pours out of the ground and money pours in. And you use it to buy number plates. I think these chaps should drive their cars through the refugee camps in Jordan, Lebanon, Gaza, and Turkey so that people could line the streets and admire that number one as they go by. I had another story about it, but I think we're running out of time there.
We move on to the U.S. elections.
Well, last night Obama gave his support to Hillary Clinton to be the next president of the United States. On Tuesday, Hillary gave a victory speech saying that the Democratic Party had nominated her to stand against Donald Trump. She was so excited, eh? So excited. Grinning widely, she said, "It's incredible that a major party had chosen a woman as its candidate for president. And it's incredible that a woman could become the president of the United States. It's a miracle. It's historic. It's unimaginable. It's mind-blowing. It's breathtaking. Well, hang on. Look, I don't like to brag, okay? Okay, forget that. I like to brag. Now, look here, Auntie Hillary. You are a bit late, eh? You are a bit late. The U.S. is a bit late in deciding to allow a woman to become president of the country. I don't want to spoil your happiness, but we Muslims have been very much ahead of you. We Muslims who are repeatedly accused of keeping our women down. Well, I got news for you. Here is a list of women who beat you a long time ago. This is the list. Benazir Bhutto, Prime Minister of Pakistan. Khalida Zia, Prime Minister of Bangladesh. Tan Su Celi of Turkey. Sheikh Hasina, Prime Minister of Bangladesh. Megawati Sukarnoputri, Prime Minister of Indonesia. Mem Madio Boye, Prime Minister of Senegal. Atifete Janga, President of Kosovo. Rosa Oturi Bayeva, President of Kyrgyzstan. Sise Mariam Kaidama Sidibe, Prime Minister of Mali. Aminata Touré, Prime Minister of Senegal. Amina Gourib Rakim, Prime Minister of Mauritius. So, there you are, dear listeners. Apologies to Hillary for being a party pooper. Anyway, I don't want to discuss any heavy subject. No in-depth analysis, especially at this part of the morning when your head is a little heavy and the mood is not quite bubbly. So, let me keep it light. Let me speak about Muhammad Ali.
Yes.
I know everything that has to be said about Muhammad Ali has already been said over and over again. Hundreds of articles have been written, obituaries, eulogies, etc., in hundreds of newspapers all around the world. Many marveled at his incredible skill in the ring. Some may not approve of the sport, but no one can deny the huge impact he had outside of the ring. Perhaps the single quality he possessed was that he was a person of deep conviction. Deep conviction. A man of principles, and he demonstrated the courage of his conviction regardless of criticism or condemnation from the society in which he lived. For example, he won the Olympic boxing title for America. He said, "It's worth nothing if he is not allowed into a restaurant in his country." And then he threw the gold medal into the river. He said he won't go to Vietnam to kill innocent people. He was banned from boxing at the peak of his young life when he could have made millions but was almost made completely broke. He became Muslim because he believed it was the best cause in his life. He took another leap, leaving the Nation of Islam group to enter Sunni Islam. Of course, you heard all of this. That's why I'm not going into detail. But let me tell you a few things that really surprised me. Firstly, Muhammad Ali's last fight was decades ago. Secondly, Ali's first signs of Parkinson's disease was about 32 years ago. Since then, he was fading away from the public limelight. So over this time, one would assume that he went off the center stage. And the assumption is that his passing away would gain some attention, maybe even a lot of attention. But I want to confess, I want to be honest, I never expected the kind of coverage that the media gave him. CNN and BBC had saturation coverage non-stop the whole day, both channels, exploring every angle of his life. And on top of that, almost every leader of every country in the world expressed his or her admiration of this great man. Even that donkey, Donald Trump, came forward to praise him. And you know, that's quite funny. When Obama spoke at the Islamic Society of Baltimore in February, he noted the many contributions that Muslims made to America, including as sports heroes. Donald Trump responded with a tweet. Obama said in his speech that Muslims are our sports heroes. What sport is he talking about? And who? But on Friday, Donald Trump tweeted, Muhammad Ali is dead at 74, a truly great champion and a wonderful guy. He will be missed by all. So let me say this again. I was absolutely pleasantly surprised at this huge outpouring of sorrow and admiration. And more importantly, the coverage by the media. Really wonderful. Well, let me jump a little bit forward here and say that that many people came out, you know, to tell you their stories about how he personally touched them. That surprised me also. Hundreds and hundreds of people spoke about the humility of this man and how he personally spoke to them and inspired them. Okay, dear listeners, I told you that I'm not going to speak about anything heavy today, so let me tell you this. I have a personal story to tell you about Muhammad Ali. I also met him. No, I'm not kidding. I spent some time with him a very long time ago. Let me start at the beginning. Do we have a couple of minutes?
Yes, yes, go ahead.
Right. In the early 70s, I was in Dublin in Ireland. Quite a young lighty then. What I was doing there will remain the subject of speculation. Muhammad Ali had arrived there about 10 days before a big fight against Al Blue Lewis. The fight was going to be held in the Dublin Stadium, soccer stadium. Tickets were very expensive, even the cheap ones. So if you bought cheap tickets, you would sit very far away and hardly see the punches. So what to do? What to do? And then a light bulb moment occurred to me. I thought, hey, why don't I write an article about Muhammad Ali and get it published in a South African newspaper? What a brilliant idea. So what's the next step? I managed to get the number of the hotel where Ali was staying with his entourage. It was in the countryside about 40 kilometers away from Dublin. So I decided to take a wild chance, a shot in the dark. I called the hotel knowing that I would get some public relations guy who would ask me a million questions and then fob me off by saying, okay, we'll call you, don't call us. Guess what happened? I got through to reception and said in my most authoritative voice, hello, I'm from the South African media. Please put me through to the room of Muhammad Ali. Well, Irish people are very nice people, they're simple people. I think he was very impressed with my tone and he replied, no problem, sir, I'll put you through. Wow, that was surprising. And then a voice picked up the phone on the other end and said, yeah? Trying very hard not to be nervous and in my best voice I said, my name is Abu Bakr Ahmed Dawji from South Africa, South African media. I would like to interview Muhammad Ali. And he replied, Assalamu alaikum, my brother. This is Rahman, Muhammad's brother. Great to speak to you. When would you like to come over? Well, I was shaking with excitement and I said, as soon as possible, what about tomorrow? And he said, no problem, brother Abu Bakr, come over. Well, I can tell you I was stunned, nearly fainted. Wow, I'm going to meet the champ. Well, I told my two friends, Abu Bakr Khatri and another whose name was, if I remember, Fishy. And they said, ah, man, please take us with you. So I borrowed someone's camera and a tape recorder and mic. And next day, all excited, we took a bus to the village. We entered the five-star hotel. A huge number of journalists were milling around waiting for Ali. I went to reception. They pointed out a PR guy. I told him what I was there for, and he said very arrogantly, well, Ali won't be seeing anyone. He's on his way out. Maybe you can wave at him as he's passing by. My heart sank, as you can imagine. I told him, I had an appointment. No dice. This guy was very stubborn. Just then, Ali and about six or seven of his people, his brothers and everyone, came down the stairs. and the journalists surged forward, but security held them back. And then the most amazing thing happened. Rahman walked towards us and said, Muhammad, these brothers are from South Africa. And then he told us, let's go and sit over there. And we went to one side of the reception area, far from the journalists. I couldn't believe it. I put my Tiki Line tape recorder and mic on the coffee table, and so the interview began. But Ali was in no mood for a serious discussion. He spoke for a few minutes, and then he picked up a cigarette packet from the table, took out the silver paper, tore off a small piece, rolled it up into a tiny ball, and he said, now I will show you my power, my brother. And he put the ball onto his tongue for a second, and then took my hand and placed it on top of my hand. Then he said, now you will feel it getting warm. Well, I thought he was trying to hypnotize me or something, so I sort of averted his gaze. He said, now it's getting warmer. I tried not to think about it. It's getting hot, he said. I was feeling something. It's very hot. And then I saw smoke coming out from that tiny ball, and I quickly brushed it off. I said, hey, and saw a burn mark on the back of my hand. Everyone burst out laughing. Ali had a very big grin on his face. How did he do that? Well, I really don't know. Ali was in the mood to have fun. The big crowd of journalists kept sending messages with security asking to speak to him, but he told them to wait. After all, he was with a very important South African journalist, eh? After the burning paper trick, he was ready for more fun. He said to us, okay, now I will demonstrate some more of my power. He asked the waiter for a glass of water. The waiter brought it and placed it on the coffee table. And Ali said, now listen here. I'm going to leave the room, and without me walking back into the room, you will see the glass of water rise into the air, and the water will disappear. Let me repeat that. I am going to leave the room, and without me walking back into the room, you will see the glass of water rise before your eyes, and the water will disappear. Anyone wants to put some money down? Well, all his friends burst out laughing, say, you can't do that, man. You can't do that. And he said, put your money down. One guy put down $50, and somebody else put $20, and so on. Everyone was laughing, wondering what he's going to do. But Ali said, okay, watch the glass carefully. I'm going to leave the room now, and without me walking back into the room, the glass will rise and the water will disappear. He left through a nearby door. 5 seconds later, he came crawling on all fours, crawled up to the glass, lifted it and drank the water and put the money into his pocket. Everyone fell down laughing. Yes, he didn't walk back into the room. He crawled back. What a character. Full of fun. Anyway, I was invited to attend his training session. Even there, he was very funny. He had a very sharp wit. While he was sparring with someone in the ring, there was a chap who was heckling him. I think he was a little bit drunk or something, shouting insults at Ali. Ah, you're too slow. You float like a tortoise. You could see that Ali was getting irritated but ignored him. The donkey kept on with his silly comments. Then Ali stopped and addressed the small crowd watching the training session. And Ali said, let me tell you a story. When I was a little boy, my grandpappy had a farm. On this farm, my grandpappy had a donkey. And every day I used to ill-treat that donkey. I used to beat it and I used to kick it. One day my grandpappy said, son, I see that you don't treat that donkey very well. You beat it and you kick it. That's bad. One day when that donkey dies, it will come back to haunt you. Then Ali turned and pointed to the fellow irritating him and said, and I believe that day has come. Everyone burst out laughing, and the poor fellow turned bright red and he quickly disappeared. Well, lots of stories to tell you, but here's the best news. I didn't sit right at the back in the cheap seats in the stadium. No siree. I was right in the front row at ringside, sitting next to some Hollywood celebrities and TV stars. What a rush, eh? And guess what? After the fight, I went to the dressing room. Ali lay flat on his stomach, very tired. No one else was there, just him and me. I just touched him on his shoulder and said, well done, champ. And he instantly reacted with pain. Hey, watch it, man. That really surprised me. And I always thought since then, It all seems so easy when he's in the ring, but the damage must be quite considerable. Anyway, dear listeners, I think that you are thinking that I'm making all this up. Well, let me tell you this. I can't pull a fast one with Rosa, eh? And you know what? I have irrefutable proof. I have a photo. I have photographic evidence to confirm everything. I'd like to put it on Facebook, but I'm very embarrassed to do so. Those were the days of long hair and bell bottoms, and I must admit, I look quite ridiculous standing with Ali. So it will remain safely in my album. And yes, I did have shoulder-length hair a very long time ago, in the pre-Hidayat days. Okay, one last point. Isn't it remarkable that in the West, especially in the United States, where Islam is dragged into the gutters and where Muslims are insulted and attacked, the name Muhammad has resonated, has reverberated over and over again. The name Muhammad has been praised, elevated. The champ is no more, but he impacted on the world, both in his life and in his death. What a man.
What an amazing story you shared with us this morning. Really, really touching. A light at the end of the tunnel.
Do you have time for two short ones?
Yes, go ahead.
A small boy was being tucked into bed by his mother, and his mother told him to make a dua before sleeping. And the boy said, Allah Pak, please look after my mummy and daddy and my brothers and sisters. And then he shouted loudly, and don't forget to give me a bicycle for my birthday next week. And his mother said, hey, why are you shouting like that, eh? Allah can hear you. He is not deaf. And the boy replied, yeah, I know, but Dada is deaf. Here's the last one. So in the month of Ramadan, one has to be very calm. One has to control one's temper and so on. Sabar, sabar. But sometimes people want to test your patience, eh? Like that lady who changed lanes and cut in front of me, nearly giving me a heart attack. Oof. Lot of suburbs there. One fellow really tested me yesterday. I could have given him a sharp kick, but he ran away very fast. He's actually a friend of mine. He asked me, AB, what do you have for iftar? I answered, I have halim and naan. And he said, no. You must have halim and half loaf bread. I replied, what are you talking about, man? Everyone has halim with naan, not with the half loaf bread. And he said, hey, bro, didn't you learn in school, half a loaf is better than none?
Jazakumullah khair, and we chat to you next week again, inshallah.
Always a pleasure, Mawlana.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.